Hello and welcome to another episode of the Choose Strong podcast. I'm your host, Sally McCray. Thank you so much for being here. Now, if you are a new listener, I want to give you a very warm welcome and let you know that first and foremost, I value you as a listener, and I really do consider how you chose this podcast over the million other podcasts that are out there. And I don't take that lightly. So thank you so much for being here today. Secondly, I do want to welcome our regular listeners. What is up? You know, I like to open every podcast by telling you that I'm glad you're here as well. And remind you that if you are literally on a bike, running, or lifting, well done for putting the work in. If you're hanging with the family, driving, making a meal, I'm stoked to be in your ear. As always, a special shout to all the youth listeners. Yep, all the kids. Say what's up, Sally. Say what's up. And go ahead and look around at your parents. If you're with your parents, I want you to say, I'm strong. And don't you ever forget that. Thanks so much for being here, kids. As we close out 2023, which is, that's so weird for me to say right now. I really can't believe we're closing out 2023. It is, if, and you might be listening to this in 2025. So it is December 21st. I'm recording this December 21st, 2023. And this year has maybe gone by the fastest of any year. Part of that could be because of the 200-mile Grand Slam that we embarked upon. It was a very busy year releasing a book, also an audiobook. We enlivened our YouTube channel and released three documentaries. Well, the third one is about to come out. We did a lot with all of our social media outlets, including our app. This has been a really exciting, full, busy year. And of course, Eddie and I are busy raising our incredible kids. Mackenzie will be heading off to college in the summer. There's been a lot of changes, a lot of growth, a lot of hard work. And that is something that I have really been excited to dive into, especially in the last couple months. This hashtag do the work is really taken off on social media. So if you would like to join in with that, what I've been doing at the end of every day is I have been posting a story in my Instagram and I title it The Work. I then say with great simplicity the training that I did for that day. So there's no details to it outside of like maybe the actual activity I did. So I'll just say, you know, 30-minute walk. And then that's the work that I post. Now, there's lots of different things in there. There's weightlifting, run. But I don't talk about the reps or the pace or the distance, how I felt, where I am in my training, whether it was a run workout or just a run or recovery run or an easy run or how many weeks I'm into it. It is just a message of I showed up, I put the work in, I'm being consistent. And that is really something as we head into 2024 that I would love to encourage you, my listener, to do. One of the things that I've really been driving home is how important it is that you focus on the work of your hands, that you remember that you're writing your story. You can't control what other people are doing. You can't control other people's stories, how they think, how they feel, their actions. You absolutely must focus on the work that you're doing and the journey that you're on. Showing up and being consistent yourself day in and day out is so important. And I think sometimes what happens when I talk about consistent work and putting in the work is that we think that that is a go hard, go home mentality, that every day is a difficult, intense day, and it's not. Putting the work yesterday, you know what my post was yesterday? It was just recovery. I did not go to the gym. I did not head out on the trails. I was not in the mountains. I did not get on the bike. All I did was I went to the sports recovery lab, and yesterday was my recovery day. That's hard work for me. I wanted to run. I wanted to be in the gym. However, I know that where I am in my training plan right now, I know what my body needs, especially around the very busy holidays. I knew that a day of recovery was what my body needed. And so putting in the work is doing something every day to reach the big goal. And recovery is very much a part of that. Now, I had a listener write in and a very honest message. And I'm not going to share her name. I know sometimes we share the names on here because I believe this is a very private topic, but it's something that many people question and maybe struggle with. And she basically asked about recovery days because she struggles with exercise addiction. And for her, if she is not getting out every single day and getting in like a solid workout, then she struggles with that. And it's really hard to not do something. So her question was very genuine. She says, I see that you talk about showing up consistently every day, and I struggle with exercise addiction. And so I'm curious if you ever recover, if you ever take a day off and what that looks like. And so I was really thankful that she asked that question because it did bring me back and make me question myself and say, am I communicating this right? Because I can't expect everyone that follows me on the day that they know my story, they know all the other posts and the podcasts and all about all the content that I put out and what I'm about. Now, I've talked about recovery for many, many years on many different podcasts. When I speak at live sporting events, I believe that recovery is a part of the work. It is work. It is a discipline that most athletes do not like to do because we don't get the same sense of accomplishment. Maybe it's that dopamine effect. It's that training high or racing high. We don't experience that when we're in recovery. We actually feel like we are losing out on fitness. And what makes it worse is getting on social media and seeing all the work, the hard training, the intense workouts that other people are doing. And so we won't put recovery in there as fitting a training schedule, fitting the work, when actually it is very much a part of it. And this is how we are able to do what we love for longer with a lessened risk of injury and burnout. I think this is how we actually grow stronger is in the rest. That's how we build back up so that we can be better and stronger for the actual workout. So very grateful to the listener who asked me that question. And I do want to encourage you. Sometimes it is about flipping our perspective. And this podcast is very much about our mental game in every area of our life. And sometimes, you know, I've talked with food in this area. I refer to food as fuel. And if you can think of what's the best way to fuel my body so that I can train the absolute best, the strongest, and be the most energized, that's the kind of fuel that I'm going to get. I know I need fuel, so I can't skip it. And it also helps us make just better choices for choosing the right fuel that's going to fuel our body. Well, it's the same thing with recovery. That is part of the work. Recovery is not laziness. Recovery doesn't mean that you quit, that you gave up. Recovery doesn't mean that you're any less of an athlete. Recovery does not mean that now you've missed your goals and you're not strong enough. Recovery is the work. And so I want to change the messaging around that. And I want to encourage you to write that in. That is the work. See, it's one thing when you take a day off and then you never go back to working again. You never go back to working toward that goal. You decide to walk away. That's called quitting. Recovery is not quitting. Recovery is your absolute best possible way to ensure that you're fully rested, energized, and ready for the hard work. See, when you look at a normal training plan, it isn't a hard running workout 7 days a week. Your body can't maintain that. It's either going to get sick, get injured, or do something to make you sit down because your body knows that it can't stay at this super high peak intensity all the time. And this is the same for a work project, a school project. This is the same in relationships. You're not always going to be on a high 100% of the time. You can't pull all-nighters in college every single day of the entire school year. something's going to break, something's going to get sick, something's got to give, and you are going to take away the effectiveness of what you are actually capable of doing. So thank you so much for writing in on that. And again, I want to just encourage you as we are entering into the new year to really focus on the work of your hands, the work that you are doing. Focus and remember that we are all at a different point in our journey. So your starting point's going to look really different from somebody else's. I was laughing actually the other day, and I think this is a really good story to go along with what I'm saying. I was out on the path down here in Huntington Beach, and there's a lot of people that run down in Huntington Beach. And if you are someone that gets fired up by seeing other people run, or maybe you get competitive, or maybe even down on yourself when somebody runs past you, I know for me, I was laughing the other day because I had slowed down to a walk after I finished my run. And so I was slowing down in my run. I was coming back to a jog, and I was about to start walking when this guy went like running past me so hard. But the path down by the beach is very wide. It is, I want to say at some points, it feels like it's like 15 feet wide. And there wasn't a lot of people on the path, but for whatever reason, this guy ran so close to me and passed me so hard that I started giggling to myself because I immediately thought about how easy it is to think in our minds that, okay, I need to start running again because I need to prove to that person that, you know, I'm just as fast. Or putting myself in the other runner's shoes and wondering if he's thinking, oh yeah, man, I totally passed her. Like, I'm way faster than her. What's up now? I thought about like both sides of the scenario. And really what made me laugh too is I really wanted to share this story with you because I've heard so many stories, and I personally have been in so many different scenarios where you'll even see like on Strava, or you'll be in conversation with people where they'll bring up how they passed someone, or they took someone's course record, or, you know, maybe they passed someone that they knew really well in the running community that always beats them in a race, but they beat them out on the trail or in this course. And I thought, you know, what's interesting is that we don't know where someone is in their workout. We don't know where someone is in their training. You know, you could be out for a recovery run. You could be out for a tempo run, and maybe you're getting past. You don't know what those other people are doing in their training. You don't know how many miles they have going. You don't know if they're doing repeats or if they're out just for a recovery jog or what kind of race they're training for, even if they're even training for a race at all. And I think sometimes we can lose sight of our goals and what's important when we focus so much on what other people are doing. And so this idea of just doing the work and let all the details that surround that work remain precious to you. You know, I like to take a book and I write in all the details about my training. I just have a sketchbook and I write down the pace and how I felt and where I am in my training and what kind of workout it was. And I talk about the intensity that I did. And I write down and talk so much about my goals in my sketchbook. I talk about things that I can work on and things that I want to change and areas where I struggle and things that I learned. All those things are precious to me. And I don't have to share those with anyone. There's no rule that says that I have to share those with people. But if I do decide to share them, you know who I'm going to share them with? People who know me. People who really care and see my work day in and day out, who know how precious my goals are to me, who understand where I'm going, who understand the present day in my life. And I'll tell you what, that's very, very few people. And that's okay. I think we get to a point in our life where we realize that the people that are in our inner circle are very precious to us. Those more often are the ones who we can invite to speak critically into our lives, that constructive criticism, the ones that we really value their opinion. They're the ones that we bounce ideas off when we're struggling, or maybe we do need to be called out on the carpet if we're out of line. I mean, those people are like gold. And I'm just thinking of some names that are popping into mind, these very close, dear college friends of mine. I think of Eddie. He very much is that to me. But I think it's easy in today's age, because of social media apps, that we feel like we have to explain our work, that we have to write in great detail and justify what our pace is and where we are in our training and how we're feeling at a race or why that race didn't go well. And you actually don't. What is the most important thing for you to do is show up, get the work done, and repeat, and you keep moving on. The consistency is very important because you're training yourself, you're training your brain to show up every single day, and that's going to start to bleed off in everything in your life. And I actually talked about this in another episode. I believe it was on Nick Bear's podcast, so it was another episode here. I did a podcast with Nick Bear last month, and we got into this discussion about effort. And two podcasts ago, I said consistency is far more important than the effort. And I wanted to expand on that comment because consistency will always be the most important. You can't give an effort unless you're consistent. So showing up, that's the first step. But the effort that you should give, it really is unique to each person. See, I could stand at the start line of a race and my best effort might put me in first place. I could stand at a start race at another side of the nation and my best effort might put me in last place. And so you get the example there. The idea is what you feel in that effort that is fitting to you personally, and only you know when you're giving your best effort. One of my favorite verses is about running in a race. I love this verse so much because it basically says that when you run in a race, only one person receives the prize. So only one person wins. Only one person is the champion in a race. But what if we all ran the race with great endurance as if we were the ones to get the prize? And basically what that means is, what if you ran like you were a champion? What if instead of waiting to become the champion, that's just how you acted all the time? Every time you ran a race, every time that you trained, every day that you woke up, you acted like you were the winner. You acted like you were the best in the world. You were the champion. You were the expert. That's the mindset that you carried on a day-to-day basis. Because the reality is, yeah, there might be polls and voting and awards for like the best of the best in the world. But that doesn't devalue your work. That should never devalue your effort. When you position yourself and tell yourself that I'm going to give my best as if I am the champion of the world, you will be amazed at what you can accomplish. You will be amazed at what you're able to do and what you're able to achieve. Probably you'll be achieving more than you ever thought was possible. See, your mind is so powerful. But so often we get caught up in what other people are doing, or we look at other people that seem to be achieving more or making something look easy, and we think, well, I'm just not cut out for this. You see, I don't have that talent. And it's easy to get in the way of ourselves and our goals and take away from the opportunities that are right in front of us. So as we close out 2023, this is a wonderful time for reflection and really thinking about those things. I want you to think about in this past year, if you ever got in the way of yourself, your goals, mainly because of opinions of yourself or assumptions. I talk about fear a lot. Fear is another one. But I believe this time of year is a wonderful time for reflection as well as dreaming for what's ahead in the new year. And so regardless of how your year turned out, you know, you might rate your year and those goals and those dreams that you had for yourself. You might rate that as a negative or maybe a positive tone right now. But I want to encourage you, no matter how terrible some things may have been, you must find the good. You got to find the blessings in what is around you and be thankful. That gratitude is so powerful. Now, coming from someone who has known a lot of rough storms in my life, and again, if you're a brand new listener, a brand new follower, I encourage you to read my book. You can also scroll through some of my posts on Instagram. You can learn a little about me through some other podcasts, but I realize how hard life can be. But it is good practice, and it's character building that even in those hard moments that you find the things that you can still be grateful for. And if you can't even think of one, the fact that you woke up today is such a gift. You waking up means there's still work to be done. There's still a purpose for you to be here. And that's powerful. And that's something you can be grateful for. The goal is always to build on each year, even the hard seasons. And to be honest, the hardest seasons of my life were where I experienced the most strength. And I'm not going to say it's immediate. You know, when you are in it, you're probably not telling yourself, man, this is such an awesome struggle. I love this setback, this failure. This challenge is awesome. This massive heartbreak. Wow, yay. No, that it's sometimes it takes time. And being in the middle of it is really hard. Sometimes a few years will pass. And after that painful time, you know, one morning you might look in the mirror after a really rough season is done and you'll realize, wow, I got through all of that. Here I am. Don't ever stop doing that. As you look forward to 2024, and you might be listening to this at a completely different time of year season. So as you look forward to each new day, this is important. I mean, I think you can listen to this over and over again and realize this applies to each new day, and every day is new. Every day is a new chance. You get to be here today. Yesterday is done. Tomorrow isn't guaranteed. And so let's continue on. So after this podcast, I'd love for you to take a few minutes and just use that time to reflect, to be grateful. You know, I love the written word. I said this before. I've been taking time each day to write my sketchbook, training, goals, things I need to work on, frustrations, hopes for the future, prayers for loved ones. It's great practice. Nothing fancy. I just write it. It's just for me. It's not stuff I'm taking pictures of and posting all over the internet. It's not a book that I share with my family. It's just for me. So a big part of what I'm discussing today is your goals and how to achieve more with a mind shift. And I've already touched on a little bit of that already, as far as just looking at things from a different perspective. You know, how you choose to view and approach your goals has everything to do with your current mindset. And my hope is that this podcast will help you develop a stronger mindset in every area of your life. Now, I want to get right to the point of today's topic and ask you a question, okay? So you're going to answer this in your head, or you can answer it out loud. But when you choose a goal, how much of it is based on the opinion of yourself? How much of your goal is based on what others think of you? As always, you know, I'm not only referring to running or only fitness. I'm talking about any goal you set for yourself. This could be you wanting to be in a band or to get back out in the dating scene. This could be in regards to your college major or pursuing a new career. The weak or negative opinion you have of yourself, or the unnecessary value you place on other people's opinions of you, can absolutely keep you from achieving what you dream of doing. Now, I want to share a story with you. Actually, it's two stories. One is from my youth, and actually this story is in my book, so I'm going to just touch on it briefly. And the other one is from my late 20s. So these stories are over a decade apart, but they absolutely relate to each other. And it wasn't until I was older that I was able to look back and see that I was building from one season to the next, and that everything was necessary and in some way connected in order to get me to where I am today. Most importantly, there was a lot of growth I was experiencing, especially in my mental game. And that is why these stories will be powerful for you, because I believe most of you will be able to relate to some, if not all, of this. So when I was a little girl, I really wanted to be a gymnast. And not just, I should actually put it this way, I wanted to be an Olympic gymnast. So I came, just a quick background on my family. I came from a big family. There's five kids in my family. we didn't have a lot of money for things like that. You know, going gymnastics is a pretty expensive sport, especially when you add in the amount of time that you need to spend, especially if you are on the path to going to the Olympics. There's also dance classes and other things. It's a huge commitment. And by the time I was able to afford gymnastics classes, and again, this story is in my book, so you can read about the whole thing. At 12 years old, I made enough money in order to pay for what I termed as real gymnastics classes. So I did all this babysitting and I did extra chores for the people that I babysat for. I did everything I could to save up money for these gymnastics classes. Now, the key part in that is I was 12 years old and I told my mom that I wanted to do these gymnastics classes. And she said, you know, we can't afford that. They're really expensive. And I complained. I complained that it wasn't fair that other families that had more money than us, that they got to sign up for whatever sports teams that they wanted to, for any training classes they wanted to. And I didn't have that opportunity. I just, as a little kid trying to understand life, I didn't think that was fair. And instead of my mom coddling me in that idea of like, yeah, it stinks not having a lot of money. That's just the way the world is. And so deal with it. Like some people always have more money than us. Instead, she encouraged me to work. And she said, you know, you're old enough and people know you in this neighborhood. You can start babysitting more. Get really good at babysitting by being the best babysitter that you can be. You know, clean the kitchen, vacuum, make dinner for these kids. You're going to start getting a lot of babysitting jobs. And so I did just that. Instead of throwing a pity party for myself and saying that life isn't fair, the world isn't fair, I don't like how things are operating, mom just said to work. And that lesson as a kid was so powerful to me. Obviously, I didn't know at the time. I mean, you know, I think it's very easy in our youth to be very self-focused. And I went through a lot of season in my life where I was complaining and saying that just life wasn't fair. And at this time, what I knew to be true is I loved gymnastics. And so I found a way because I loved it. And the real gold in this story is not that I became an Olympic gymnast, because that absolutely did not happen. You can read about what happened in the rest of the story. There was actually a lot of heartbreak when I finally made enough money and showed up to the gymnastics class. In some ways, I felt like I was too old, I was too big, and too late in order to do what I wanted to do. And again, I expand upon that story in my book. But you know, there was something else that was going on. I learned how to commit to a goal and to not stop until I got there. See, the goal I thought I was committing to was becoming an Olympian. But the real goal where I gained the most value was learning how to work and not stopping until I achieved what I wanted to. See, the goal that I missed as a kid was that I raised enough money to get to that gymnastics class. That was the hardest goal of all, was taking the first step and putting in the work in order to get to the next step in where I wanted to be, which was where I was able to explore and understand what I had to work with. But then I moved on from there. See, being able to achieve this idea of working hard to make my own money, that was something I then used for the rest of my life. If there was something that I wanted, then I knew I could work for it. If I felt slighted or that I didn't have the same opportunities as my peers, then I would tell myself, I'm just going to keep working for it. I'm going to work harder because I know that hard work, something good is going to come from that. And sometimes it isn't always what you expect it to be. But what's important is that all those days of working were not in vain, because it was the training I needed to get me to where I am today. And that, my friend, is why your daily work is so important. All right, so now I'm going to fast forward to mid to late 20s. So gymnastics story is when I was 12. Now here we are, mid to late 20s. And around this time, Eddie and I had only been married for a year, and we moved to Washington, D.C., and I took a job at a paper company. Now, before that, when we were back in California, I was a high school English teacher and a soccer coach, and I had a side job at Victoria's Secret. So I was very busy. Now, I knew nothing about paper, about sales, or sitting in a cubicle. If you've ever watched one of my favorite shows, The Office, yeah, that's kind of a very similar setting to what I was in. And all that I knew when we moved out to Washington, D.C. was that we needed money. We needed to pay our bills. And so I took the first job I could find. The goal at the time was to get a job, period. So I learned about paper. And I learned about CMYK. If you know what that is, that has to do with ink. I became very well-versed in CMYK. I understood the different types of paper, how printing works. I learned all the print and paper jargon. It was, by my own very personal account, the most boring, mundane work I had ever done. And sitting in a cubicle was like torture for someone like me. Staring at a computer, doing sales calls. I would take my breaks in a stuffy little room. But I did make friends with the people who were there. You know, people who had been working there for 5, 10, 15 years. And then I decided it was time to say goodbye, because when I realized, oh my goodness, this is not a good place for me, I thought, well, I can continue working here and maybe I can find another job where maybe I won't become depressed. So one day I was in a Trader Joe's and I was sampling the cheese. They had put out like this cheese sample and it was so good. I love cheese. And there were some women there that I had seen. I didn't really know who they were, but I knew that they were from my church. And I'm eating this cheese, like, so good. And this group of women was right next to me. I was like, have you guys tried this cheese? It is delicious. And so just from that one question, have you tried this cheese? I struck up a conversation with who is now one of my very dear friends, Carrie Hasenbog. Carrie Hasenbog and I started chatting about what I did for work. And I started sharing that we had just moved from California. I've been working at this paper job only for a couple months. We really needed the money, but I was incredibly unhappy there. Maybe even had a little regret in taking it, but I felt it was the right thing to do. And one of the things I said was, you know, I like to be busy. I really like to work. And I feel like it's so slow going. There's not a lot for me to do there. I sit staring at a computer a lot and it's just a very slow paced office. And a light bulb went on in her head. And she remembered her husband, Scott, who had started working at this nonprofit organization called Shohana's Hope, which is now called Show Hope. And it's a nonprofit that gives grants to people that are adopting to help them overcome the financial barriers that often come with adoption. And he needed an assistant. He was basically running the whole organization, this nonprofit, by himself. And so she told him about me, and I think it was within 24 hours I was offered a job. But it was the same situation. I knew nothing about working for a nonprofit adoption grant agency. And I remember when I left the paper job, because I was on really good terms with the boss. We would talk all the time. Really nice man who had a great family. And he was just really kind. I remember even thinking when he hired me, I knew nothing about paper and he took a chance on me. And so now it was time. I'd only been there for a couple months. I went to him and I explained, you know, I really appreciate you taking a chance for me, but I have found something else that I'm really passionate about. I am very passionate about orphaned and fostered children. And I would love this opportunity to work in this nonprofit. And he said to me, you know, I knew you wouldn't stay long. This isn't the kind of work that you should be doing, Sally. And that meant a lot to me, because sometimes we leave jobs and that isn't always the way that it goes. You know, sometimes it's a pretty rough transition, but I transitioned into working for Show Hope. I came in on my first day of work, I had no idea what to expect. I had no idea what I was getting myself into. I can say with full confidence, I knew nothing about what I was getting into. So despite my zero experience, they took a chance on me. And the only thing I had to offer was hard work. And that was really the one reason why I got that job. I had told Carrie, I love to be busy. I like to work hard. And at this time, you know, 10 years, 12 years past that gymnastics story, I had had several jobs. And every job that I had taken, I went in not knowing what to do. I mean, I was a kid. And the best way for me to learn was just by trying. I had to listen. I had to watch. I had to experiment. I did a lot of failing. I made mistakes at every single job I ever had. Monumental mistakes, embarrassing mistakes. And I had to come back to work and try again. I had to learn to perfect my craft. I understood by this time when I was going to work at Show Hope that I could apply that same work ethic there. I might not know anything today, but I know that if I work hard, I'm going to know a lot more in just a matter of 4 weeks, in 8 weeks, in a year. And so my job at Shohanna's Hope turned into a lot of experimenting, figuring things out. I had 5 different job titles. In fact, it was really interesting because we worked, this is actually Stephen Curtis Chapman's foundation. So he is a 5-time Grammy Award musical artist, and he and his family have adopted 3 kids. And when people started sharing with them, man, I'd love to adopt 2, but it's so expensive. That's why he started this organization. And at first he was just writing checks to people saying, here you go, go and adopt. I'll help you out. So he started this nonprofit so that he could help more people. And he went on a 70-city tour. And it was just Scott and I running this foundation. And from the stage of every concert that he did, he would talk about this foundation. Now, you would have thought there was 50 people working for Show Hope. And it was just Scott and I. And so I had 5 different job titles. I was the assistant to the executive director. I was the communications coordinator. I was the social media and marketing coordinator. I worked on the website. I would get into conversations with local radio stations to do ads. I was a ghost writer. I did a lot of the hard copy material that went out. I did a lot of creative things for them. They have this book called The Miracles of Adoption book. I helped create that. There was a lot of things that I learned to do. I also made a lot of monumental mistakes because I didn't know a lot about technology and websites. I didn't even know how to use an Excel sheet, which is really crazy because, you know, even as a teacher, I mean, I use the most basic like graph, but like I didn't know all the functions or anything about all the cool things you could do with Excel. And I remember very well many nights going home and crying, feeling so overwhelmed that I had taken this job, that I had jumped in to the deep end and I felt swallowed whole. And really, I think that's a normal feeling to have when you don't know what you're doing, when something is new, when you're in the middle of a new transition, when you feel like a beginner. I mean, everything is new and you feel feeble. You know, it's funny now. I can laugh at a lot of the stuff now because looking back, man, I grew so much in that job. I learned so much from that job at Show Hope. You know, I'll tell you what, there was many events that I had to attend. And seeing that our office was right there in Washington, D.C., and that I was the assistant to the executive director, you know, I was rubbing elbows with people I had no business connecting with. At least that's what I thought in my mind. I was put in a lot of situations where I had to learn on the spot. And I had to communicate with a lot of different types of people. I had to communicate with donors. I had to communicate with families that were adopting. I had to communicate with other musical artists. I had to communicate with the community as a whole. I would go to these concerts and I would work booths. So I would just communicate, you know, with people that were attending a musical concert. People of all different ages and walks of life. I learned a lot during that season at Show Hope. And then 2 years and a lot of sweat and tears later, we had our daughter Mackenzie out there. And we decided to move back to California. So I said goodbye to that job that I really loved, where I had experienced so much growth and had made incredible friendships. And we moved back all the way to the other side of the nation, to sunny Southern California. And guess what? I had no job. I had a brand new baby. And Eddie and I were living in this very little crappy apartment. And I really didn't want to go back to work. I really wanted to be a stay-at-home mom. I didn't want to work in an office. I would do anything. And I told myself that. I told Eddie that. I know that I need to be making money. I will do anything to stay home with Mackenzie. See, at this time, you know, Eddie and I, this early on in our marriage, we had never been in jobs where we were making good money. I mean, we were always kind of scraping by. And so, you know, a big move across the country, that was really rough too. That took a lot out of us. And so the sooner I could get a job, the better. But Mackenzie was 3-4 months old. And it was my dream to be a mom. It was my dream to be able to be at home and to not have to go, you know, into work, you know, 5 days a week, which is very normal. That's very common. I think a piece of that too was having lost my mom so young. I really valued that time that I had with her. So, you know, there was a part of me too that was very sensitive to every moment that I would have with my kids. And being at home, being able to raise my kids was a dream of mine. So I did what I knew to do. And I researched every possibility to work from home. You name it, I probably looked into it. You know, I even tried selling insurance door to door. I remember making flyers and dropping them off all over the neighborhood. I would run because at this time I was running. I had already gotten into endurance running. I had run Boston right before I got pregnant with Mackenzie. And then when Mackenzie was 6 months old, we went back to Washington, D.C. I did the Marine Corps marathon. I would do like one marathon a year. It was just kind of me staying in shape. And so I would run all over these neighborhoods when Eddie would get home from work. And I was trying to sell insurance. Well, that did not work very well. And we ended up living on credit cards. And if any of you listeners understand what that is like, it's very stressful. And so I then thought to myself, well, if I am going to work from home and I really need to do something that's not only bringing in money, but I would love to do something that I love. I would love to do something with all these years of experience of working. And hello, I kept telling myself, you know, I have a college degree. I should be able to get something that is some type of job that can bring in some money. So I started studying to be a strength and fitness coach. And I did a deep dive into teaching outdoor fitness boot camps. I got really good at it. I loved it. And I loved the schedule. See, my classes were all at 5 a.m. And Eddie didn't have to leave for work until like 7:30. And both my kids, it was such a blessing, were pretty good sleepers. They both started sleeping through the night very, very early after I had them. And so I knew I could leave the house for like 1.5, 2 hours and come back in time and nurse my kids while I did this. So I really loved that I had found something that worked with my schedule. I could get up at 4 o'clock in the morning. This is where my 4 a.m. started. Get up at 4 a.m., go teach an outdoor fitness boot camp to a bunch of women, which was also great just for my total well-being because I got to interact with women. We got a little workout in. And then I drove home. And by that time, Mackenzie was just waking up so I could nurse her. And then Eddie was getting ready for work, so we'd have our coffee together. And then he would be off to work and I'd stay home all day with Mackenzie. It was a dream come true. And I had found a local boot camp, a very big popular boot camp in Southern California to work for. And I got had a great relationship with the owners. And every class that I started to teach got popular. So more and more people started coming to my classes. But I noticed I couldn't tell if the owners really liked that because the owners also taught their outdoor fitness classes as well. And as time went on, they started to give me more classes and ask me to be a sub more often. And the more I got to know them, I started to see some problems in the business and as well as in their personal life. And I realized, yeah, that those are things that I didn't need to know. And so I decided to leave the boot camp. Now, before I left, when I let them know that I would be leaving, one of the owners, it was a husband and a wife, one of the owners came to my class. And after I finished, he stood in front of everybody. And he said, you know, this is Sally's last day at class, you know, and there are a lot of people, you know, have these sad faces. Oh, we're going to miss you. And the owner pauses and he puts his hand on my shoulder and he looks out at all of these women and he says, you know, Sally really wasn't that great of a trainer anyway. And we've already hired someone else. She's going to be better than Sally. You know, we'll miss Sally, but, you know, she wasn't that great. I thought he was joking. But what he was doing was protecting his business by saying, you guys don't leave this class just because Sally's leaving. That's not a big deal. We have someone better. And so we'll see you guys next week. I'm looking at him and realizing he is dead serious. The way that he's protecting his business is by throwing me under the bus and embarrassing me in front of everyone, putting me down in front of everyone. I stood there, beet red. And, you know, for a moment, I believed him. You see, if you read my book, you'll understand why. It would be really easy for me to believe critics, especially at that time in my life. Critics who attacked my self-worth. I drove home in tears. And you know, I'll tell you what, I let myself be upset. I'm human. That hurt. But you know what? I also did. I remembered that at this time in my life, I've been around the block a few times. You see what happens when you put yourself out there? When you put yourself out there and you fail over and over and over again, when you put yourself out there and you connect with hundreds and thousands of people just like you who are also struggling and failing and achieving and trying just like you, you learn a lot. You learn a lot about life. You learn a lot about this journey. You learn how to communicate with people. You see, I had worked in so many industries and had been around thousands of people that I had to learn how to communicate with a variety of personalities. I had to learn how to operate in many stressful and tense situations. That when this happened, when I stood in front of my fitness class and the owner put me down, I knew what to do. By this time in my life, I had had more than 15 jobs. I also had failed so many times in my life at this point, I believed I actually knew better. See, the failing actually helped me. The struggles helped me. All those years of trying and not knowing what to do and dealing with some tough personalities, it was like I had been schooled for this moment. I knew better than to let a high and mighty businessman squash me right there. I also knew how foolish it would be to let his words dictate my next steps. I thought to myself, let him think what he wants. I know I'm a good trainer. And even if I'm not, you know, even if I am puffing myself up right now, I know I can even be better. I know I can do the work. I know I can keep growing. Even if he's right, he hasn't seen the finished product yet because I'm just getting started. Now, friends, do you understand what I'm saying? I'm sharing this story because what's essential is the same message I've been saying for most of my life, and that is you must choose strong and keep going. You must choose strong and do the work. You can't quit. Even if you absolutely stink at what it is that you're doing, you got to keep trying. Even if you have critics and discouragement, you have to keep going. I went on to start my own fitness business. And by every account, it was successful, but not without a lot of work. I learned to be a master of my craft. You see, that other owner lit a fire in me, lit an excitement in me. I studied every area of strength, fitness, and running, and I turned my dream of being a stay-at-home mom into a reality. I taught a 5 a.m. class, and on occasion, I created also a late morning fitness class, and our bills were paid. And we were able to build a savings account, and we could have a date night here and there. We moved out of our tiny apartment and into a home with a backyard. And I have to mention, I did this all while pregnant. You see, when I left, I had just found out that I was pregnant. I was like six, seven weeks pregnant. And I remember this time in my life because it was so intense. I mean, I remember having a conversation with God at that time and laughing, thinking about how ridiculous I was to start a fitness business with a growing belly and putting on weight every week. And I'll tell you what, I put on a lot of weight with both my kids. I was afraid of not looking the part. I was afraid of doing it all on my own. I was afraid that I wouldn't be able to handle it with two kids in 2 years. Ed was working 60 hours a week, and here I was going to launch a whole business with a one-year-old while being pregnant. It would have been easy to make a lot of excuses for myself, and some I feel like would be valid, you know? Maybe not the right season. But because of the previous experience I had, having worked 2 and 3 jobs, having been in very stressful situations, working long weekly hours in my past, I thought, you know what? Why not try? Why not just give this a shot? It does sound ridiculous. I'm going to see what's possible. Friends, I'm going to pause here and reflect for a second. My original question to you was about how you construct your goals. When you construct your goal, when you have an idea, how often do you get in the way? How often do you let your fears keep you from trying? How often do you weigh your goals in accordance to other people who have been successful? You might say to yourself, oh, I could never do that. I mean, look at him or look at her. They're talented. They have all the resources in the world. They have so much help from family or nannies. Friends, I have genuinely asked myself all those questions. I'm telling you, I have been there, measuring myself against other people and what they've done and what I perceive as necessary tools in order to do something. Many times, those scared thoughts were just made up in my head. Assumptions. Fearing the worst without even trying. When I started my business, I had failed so many times in the past, in other jobs, it actually didn't scare me like it used to. That was a massive help in starting the business. I really thought, hey, it could flop. I have failed so many times, like, why not try? This might be the time where I get it right. What a freeing perspective. I want you to think about how you could apply that to your life. What area in your life can you just let yourself go and be like, you know what? I am holding myself back. It is rooted in a lot of fear. It is rooted in caring so much about what other people think of me. What would happen if you're just like, you know what? It's okay. I'll fail. I'll be all right. So I thought to myself, well, this could totally flop and I'll just try a different approach. And if that doesn't work, maybe I'll discover something else to try. But I really love this. I really love this fitness thing. I really love this schedule. This occupation brings joy to my heart. Being around people, training people, interacting with people, encouraging people. This, like, I love doing this. I'm gonna find a way to make this great. Listeners, the work you're doing today matters to your future. The work you commit to today teaches you to commit to something greater tomorrow. The failures you overcome today will teach you valuable lessons you will need tomorrow. What you overcome sets you up for something even greater down the road. Did you catch the value in the story I shared with you? When I worked at Show Hope, I had to learn to do everything. Do you know that job, that one job, taught me how to run my business? Do you know all the ways I failed there taught me how to do business right today? Do you know that all those high-profile interactions I had working with business people and big donors taught me a lot about how to deal with my business? And it helped me tremendously later on in life when I worked on sports contracts, and I'll save that for another podcast. The joy in sharing this story with you today is to encourage you in whatever you're working on right now. You might be feeling burnt out, defeated, or frustrated in your job, a relationship, training. Keep working. You might hate the season you're in right now. That season isn't going to last forever. Keep working. You might be coming back from a failed business plan, a sports injury, or a painful breakup. And I'll say it again, what you're in right now is meant for only a season. And yes, sometimes those seasons feel really long, but you're going to keep growing. You're going to keep moving. Keep those eyes focused on your goal. You're human. Feelings are real, and it's okay to feel those emotions. You know, I say let them settle in for a bit. You know, when I was talking about how I felt when I stood in front of my fitness class and my boss said she wasn't even a great trainer anyway, she's already been replaced. Yeah, that hurt. I'm not a rock. You're a human. And humans have emotions and feelings, but even those feelings are meant to change. They will. And you know what? Those feelings will breed compassion for others. Compassion for when you meet someone down the road who is in the exact spot you're in today. What I know to be true is that I can empathize and feel compassion for many different life circumstances because I experienced so much hardship in my youth. All that hurt, all that pain, all that loss, it wasn't for nothing. I get to encourage you today. If I can get through all that, then you can too. If I can build something from nothing, then you can too. If you see someone else around you achieve something, then remember, you can achieve too. If it's been done once, it's possible to do it again. And if it's not been done yet, and you dream it up in your head, then be the first to achieve it. Why not try? I'm just going to hit you right at the heart right now because you get this one incredible gift called life. Why not use it all up for what it's meant to be? And if you don't know what your life is meant for, it's meant to love and it's meant to be lived courageously. Stop giving up on yourself. Commit to the work every day. I'm sorry if someone lied to you and made you believe you are not worth the energy or the time to do what you love. Maybe you have found yourself so caught up in the opinions of others or comparing yourself to fabricated posts on social media made by strangers that you've lost sight of the beauty and wonder inside you. There is a lot in you, more than you think. And you are capable of more than you know. Today is a great day to start again. Today is a great day to get back to work. And if you're already working, I applaud you to keep going. My friend, I am so glad you are here today. Thank you for allowing me to speak to you. My hope is that you will be encouraged. Take action when this podcast is through. Think about where you're headed. Plan your steps. Write them down. And commit to the work. It's less than 2 weeks before the new year at the time that I'm recording this podcast. So this is a great episode to motivate you into action. And if it's beyond the new year, I think every day is a day where we should take action on our life. You deserve to aim high in the new year. you deserve to aim high every day. And I hope you understand, this is just not hype about achieving whatever your heart desires. This is an encouragement to commit to the work and to never, ever quit. There is no way of knowing that the work that you're doing today is actually meant for something greater down the road. There is no way of knowing that the struggle that you're in right now, the challenging season, the frustration or the setbacks that you are experiencing right now are not going to teach you an incredible lesson and will be used for something greater down the road. Keep your eyes focused on the work. Keep yourself moving forward. The stories that I shared with you today about being a gymnast at 12 years old and then being in Washington, D.C. and being at the paper company, I was 22, 23 at that time. Working at Show Hope was like 23 to 25. And then starting my own fitness business was 26. 26 years old is when I embarked on fitness, strength, and running business. I'm still doing that today. 26. I'm 44 now. That was almost 20 years ago. Almost 20 years ago. But I'll tell you what, I was learning about working long before that as a kid. And so it's so important that you understand that you are on a journey. I don't care how old you are, how young you are. If you wake up each day, you have work to do. If you are in a season of setback and frustration, it is a season and it will end. And you're going to learn something and you're going to be better. Your character is being tried. That's what we can just call it. You are in a character growing season right now. And I hope that you keep going. You can apply this to any area of your life, whether you are thinking about that training plan, that goal race that you have for yourself or that new job, or just working on yourself as a whole. You are on a journey and the story is filled with highs and lows, and there is one finish line at the end of your story. So work at it like you're the champion. Work at it like you're going to win. Be the best that you can be. Show up for yourself every day. Keep doing that work and keep choosing strong in all that you do.